Welcome to the Atlassian Advantage podcast series. Here's our next episode, Digital Transformation.
Hi, everyone. I'd like to thank you all for joining us again today for our latest podcast discussing digital transformation. I'm Sean Sullivan, the sales director of the Atlassian team at Carahsoft, and I'm joined today by digital transformation consultant from Adaptivist, John Turley. John, welcome back to the Carahsoft podcast. It's great to speak with you again.
Great to speak with you, Sean. Thanks very much for having me again.
Happy to have you back here. So let's discuss digital transformation today, John. So I think we start with our first most simple question, right? Pretty overarching word here, right? Digital transformation. Could you maybe help our listeners understand, you know, what exactly digital transformation means?
Yeah, I can. It's a common question, right? So what we're really talking about in any transformation, you know, whatever word we want to put on the beginning of it, digital or agile or just transformation or business transformation even, is a transformation of the working practices of an organization. So the people and the culture and the processes and the tools, the whole nine yards, away from hierarchical structures that rely on command and control or rely as heavily on command and control, that are organized by functions and seek efficiency. The thing they're driving for is efficiency. We're moving away from that model. We're transforming organizations towards a model that relies on autonomy more than control. That's not to say that control goes out the window. Command and control doesn't become a bad thing and have to be ostracized, right? It's still necessary, obviously, as is hierarchy. But we rely a little less on hierarchy and control and a little more on cross-functional teams rather than functional teams. We rely on cross-functional teams that are heavily focused, orientated around the creation of value for customers. Because the world's getting more complex, that can't be done to the same degree as it used to be within one function, within the, I don't know, the dev team or the or any one particular team. It requires a combination of teams. So the creation of delivery has to be done by a cross-functional group of people, and that cross-functional group of people has to collaborate more. So rather than being told what they were doing in the old model and executing, they have to be a lot more autonomous to work out how they're going to work together to create customer value. So there's an slight increased emphasis on cross-functional working and on autonomy. And that's supported well by a more complex mindset as well. So that's what we're transforming from and transforming to. We're doing it in response to increased levels of complexity, which makes things much more ambiguous and fast-paced and that kind of thing. And we're doing it so we can create more value for ourselves and for our customers.
All right, so we got the basics, right? So engaging more in cross-functional teams, maybe not less hierarchy, like you said, but maybe a restructuring, right, of hierarchy, more autonomy. So if we want to just help our listeners, you know, start from the beginning, right? So on a practical level, what does it look like to engage in some sort of digital transformation?
Well, we should talk about the digital element of transformation, I guess, right? Because the transformation needs to happen across, as I mentioned, people and processes and tools. And the digital element tends to refer to the technology which supports the processes by which people are working cross-functionally. So our perspective would be that you need to operate on the people and the processes and the tools simultaneously. So we might start with many organizations might describe themselves, many of our customers might describe themselves as being siloed. Okay. Silos didn't used to be a problem because they're very good at being efficient. But if you want to increase the emphasis on learning, that sort of cross the collaboration across organizational boundaries becomes more of a premium. And that's where the silo starts to become a problem. So the start of your transformation might practically look like deconstructing those silos or working out ways in which we can use digital technology tools and processes to collaborate more closely to create extra value with our colleagues in the next department, rather than just completing the work in our department and then relying on a handover procedure to push the work onto the next phase. So to answer your question, it might look like deconstructing silos or increasing collaboration for a lot of organizations.
Got it. So then, as you likely know, John, right, Carahsoft primarily serves the public sector and all their initiatives. How do you think the public sector can most benefit from engaging in digital transformation?
The public sector is just like the private sector, right? In that it's there to create value for whoever it considers to be its customer. And this is getting increasingly complex. That's as true for the public sector as it is for the private sector. So increasing collaboration and creating extra value through that collaboration is a stepping stone towards innovation, which is, you know, just doing anything differently, whether that's new ways of doing existing things differently or new things to do differently. Collaboration is a step towards innovation, which is a step towards creating more value for your customers.
Okay, John. So if you could, I'd love to hear about your own personal experiences when it comes to helping others with digital transformation. You know, for example, how have they helped improve operations, processes, and the customer experiences, right? Or in this case, for our customers, right? The citizens, right? So could you give us a little bit of perspective in terms of your own personal experiences?
Yeah, I can. So I'm going to try and cover that from two angles, Sean. And the first one is just sort of a quick and almost, it feels a little bit of a trite answer. We've just done some work with an organization and we helped them reorientate their teams around the creation of value rather than the functions that they did within their teams. And what that really meant is we asked them to reimagine their current ways of working around onboarding new customers, it happened to be, onto their platform. We asked them to reimagine a way of doing that more efficiently. And in order to get this group of people to do that, we had to nurture, we had to help, we had to support this group of people learn how to collaborate, because they were functionally organized. They needed to become cross-functionally organized. So as we began to unlock different kinds of conversations and develop trust and hear all the voices in the room and this kind of thing, they started to come up with their own view of better ways of working. Now, this stands starkly opposed to what I think of as the standard practice, which is hiring a bunch of consultants to come in and tell everybody what their new ways of working ought to be. What we're doing is asking the teams themselves what their new ways of working ought to be. But if you just ask them, you won't really get the right answer. They're not used to answering that kind of question if they are functionally organized. So you have to kind of do a lot of that help and support and nurturing. But what that resulted in, the reimagined value stream, we called it, had a predicted saving, time saving to onboard new customers of 66%. Right now, they've implemented that new value stream, and we don't know if that 66% was realized because they don't measure it anymore, right? But what we do know is that there has been, I think, a 40% reduction. I think it's 40%. It's very significant reduction in tickets, customer tickets associated with the onboarding of new customers. That's a marked improvement in the performance that we unlocked in a couple of weeks of working with them, really. So a 66% improvement in the time it takes to onboard is the kind of performance improvements that we're seeing when we shift teams of people from functional to cross-functional ways of working, and then help them understand some simple lean and agile principles and apply those lean and agile principles to reimagine value streams in a new way. And the benefit of them enabling them to do it for themselves is that you don't have this very awkward process where you have to sell the consultant designed way of working to the teams and ask them to adopt it and all of that, because the new way of working is born from then in the first place. So the trite answer is the kind of benefits we might see is a 66% reduction in the time taken to onboard customers. But the more interesting part of that for me is that in all the time I've been, my 30-year career nearly has been spent involved in, change, large-scale change, which we now call transformation and so on. And it's actually not the tools. It's getting the technology to work is not easy, but it is relatively easy. It's relatively easy compared to getting the right processes rolled out and adopted by teams of people. But even getting the tools and the processes done is not enough. The number of times I've been involved in work that achieves that, but still somehow something doesn't change. People still somehow, for some reason, remain locked into their existing ideas that they work in their functional units. It is their job to, write the code, not test the code or whatever it is, right? To really unlock the change, you need to address the people and cultural element of transformation. By people, I really mean mindset, right? As the environment gets more complex, and a cross-functional way of working is more complex than a functional way of working, our way of looking at the world also must get more complex. If we can't conceive of this more complex way of creating value, then we can't make it a reality, right? And the sort of exciting bit of personal experience for me is learning from the psychologists how we can support mindset and then cultural shift at the same time as we re-engineer processes and implement new tools.
Gotcha. So it's interesting that you kind of just spoke about that on the last segment there, John, as you were talking about folks that are locked into their ideas and their functions, right? And the cultural challenges, I think, because my next question was going to be, have you seen the integration of digital transformation become a challenging process for the public sector or just for folks in general? So would you say that those are kind of the biggest challenges there, the people, the cultures, kind of that ingrained ideology, right, that some folks have? And are there any other ways that you would propose to resolve them? Or is it really just that you've got to change the mindset from the ground up?
I would say that, so in answer to the first part of the question, yes, it's the mindset and culture transformation that is the hardest and by far the most important bit. One of the things I noticed years ago is that the more I read the literature from the agile world, for instance, the more I read about these two words, agile mindsets, and the less I understood about what they actually are. So many books that I read from the agile community, so many of the people I hear speaking and so on, talk about the value of agile mindset and agile culture, and then quickly move on to talking about how we're going to change the process and then change the tools, because they're much easier. People are difficult, right? They're complex. And within IT, I think we haven't really understood very well what it means to have an agile mindset. So I think that is the most challenging element, but it's also the element that unlocks the most value. Now, I am biased because I like to be, some people have referred to me in the past in our organization as the people and culture guy in our transformation team, right? So I am biased. I kind of think mindset and culture is everything, but I'm sure it is the hardest bit and it is the least addressed bit. So what we did, so the second half of your question, Sean, I think was about, if I remember rightly, you can correct me, was about what sort of practices, what things can you do to unlock that ground up shift of mindset and culture? Because saying mindset and culture is really important is one thing, right? That's quite easy, really, isn't it? Actually supporting the development of more complex mindset and culture is another thing entirely. It's much harder. And we turn to the world of developmental psychology to help us understand that, particularly to the work of two people called Robert Keegan and William Talbot. And William Talbot developed something called the Leadership Development Framework, which helps us create environments that support the development of more complex mindsets, which together we might take to be more complex cultures, more agile cultures, more agile mindsets. And there are a couple of ways we can do this. We have a number of things that we call developmental practices. That is, practices that are just designed to support the development of individual mindset, complexity of individual mindset, or complexity of conversation, or complexity of the entire organization. But that's what we mean by development. And for the individual, to support development of a more complex mindset, we have something called dialogue partnering, which is an 8 to 10 week program in which we basically have a structured conversation about how people see the world. And we start to uncover the hidden limitations in their perceptions of what their work is, which are holding them back from reaching those things that they aspire to reach. That's a really effective way of supporting an individual on their developmental journey. We use something called the leadership development profile as well to measure psychological complexity, which shows us a very clear path to psychological development. They're very effective ways of supporting development of mindset in those cases. We've got some around development of conversation and processes as well. But the drawback is that they are in addition to the work. So the dialogue partnering is an 8 to 10 week program for one individual, 1 hour a week. You know, we're fairly flexible about that. There's obviously holiday to fit in, but that's basically 8 to 10 hours over 8 to 10, or maybe a few more weeks. And that's in addition to doing their job, whatever their job is, right? It's a very effective use of their time, but it's an overhead. There's no getting away from that. So the other thing we use is something that we call developmental working practices. This is where we take just ordinary working practices that organizations are familiar with. So it might be a value stream workshop, or it might be how you do your PI planning or whatever. And we look at it through a developmental lens. And we do the same work, but for slightly different reasons. So not only are we doing the work, we're supporting the development, the psychological development of the individual and the conversational development of the group at the same time as we're doing the real work. And once we start to mix the two together, development and work in developmental working practices, then we've put the learning back into the flow of real work. Now, this is an even more effective way to support individual development in many ways, because you're not taking any time out the office to do the developmental work, as it were. So the way we go about supporting this mindset and cultural shift is with developmental practices and developmental working practices.
Okay, so then John, based on your experience and success, what are some ways an organization can use digital transformation to take it to the next level?
Okay, so this is a great question, Sean. So I guess we already talked about some of that, developmental practices and developmental working practices. That's how we go about doing our work, and that's really important. But the benefits of doing that work, the work itself is just the work itself, right? The benefits of digital transformation are something a little bit separate from the work. And what digital transformation does, you know, when it's done well, primarily, the first thing, the reason that I get out of bed every morning and come and do this work that I love, get involved in digital transformations and try to work out how to do them better, is because what we're doing in a transformation is creating more opportunities for people to engage in joyous, meaningful work, right? And I think that's a profound thing to be involved with. The great sort of management thinker, W. Edwards Deming, said the prevailing system of management is destroying our people, right? We've all got our own stories, and we'll know other people who've got stories of our working in organizations just maybe isn't always very humane. Maybe it doesn't put the person, whether that's the customer or the employee, at the center of, you know, supporting, nurturing, building a good life for them. It doesn't put them at the center of the organization. It's about creating profit almost at their expense sometimes. You know, we've all heard those horror stories. Well, a transformed organization, one that relies on autonomy to so teams can self-organize and engage in cross-functional work is a more joyous place to work. People's autonomy is supported. And there's lots of psychology, self-determination theory that points to autonomy being a universal basic psychological need. So if you want to support the well-being of your people, which in the pandemic has gone up the agenda significantly, right? If you want to support the well-being of your people, you need to support their autonomy. And control, or at least excessive control, undermines their autonomy. It reduces their well-being. That's a key thing that a transformation is going to deliver you. But it doesn't end there, because people engaged in joyous, meaningful work in cross-functional teams perform better. They create better outcomes for customers, and that creates better outcomes for whoever's paying the bills. Governments, I guess, funding the public sector. It creates better outcomes for the taxpayers who are giving the government the money to spend on whatever the services are. So transformation done well supports well-being by giving more opportunities for joyous, meaningful work. But that quickly translates into performance improvements for teams and organizations, which creates value for employees and customers. That's the thing that really gets us out of bed and doing our work. And that's the last sort of bit of that answer that wasn't addressed when we talked about developmental practices and developmental working practices.
Sure. Found it interesting how you mentioned, right, how especially the autonomy piece and how the last year and a half has really been impacted by that and shown changes. And now as the world gets back to normal, it'll be interesting to see how that agencies kind of shift a bit. But my last question for you, John, a lot of great information today, but in your opinion, how do you think any agencies or companies can best create this what we call a quote culture of innovation in order to remain competitive with digital transformation?
So we talked earlier, I mentioned collaboration, right? The deconstruction of silos so that people can collaborate. There's a really neat definition for collaboration. Two people or teams that are collaborating, the sum total of the value in a collaboration is greater than the sum of the parts. You're creating value for free, right? And that is a more complex thing to do than merely cooperating. Psychologically, that's a more complex thing to do than merely cooperating. However, innovation is even more complex. So if for those that are working in organizations that would say they were siloed, first you've got to unlock greater collaboration. But then you've got to go further. You've got to turn that collaboration into something else, which is more complex, called innovation. So I would say innovation, as much as collaboration or indeed agile, is a mindset. You've got to be able to think outside of the box in order to innovate. You've got to be able to think of things that don't yet exist. You can't write a process to innovate, right? So if leaders want to unlock a culture of innovation, they have to find ways to support individual autonomy. And by autonomy, by the way, we don't mean people working independently of each other, because that would just be chaos, right? And it's maybe a definition we might use for an autonomous car. What we mean is acting on their own volition to achieve a commonly understood goal, right, which is slightly different. But if you've got leaders to create a culture of innovation, leaders have got to find ways to support more autonomy. Because without autonomy, the only kind of innovation that you can have is the innovation that people are told to do, which means somebody at the top needs to design it and roll it out. And that's too slow. Innovation doesn't work like that. We want emerging innovation, right? Innovation coming from the edge of the network or the ground of the organization and bubbling up. And that requires autonomy. Now, so does collaboration, right? So if you get collaboration going, you're on your way towards innovation, but you need more autonomy. So leaders need to learn how to support autonomy, but they also need to learn how to support the development of a more complex mindset. They themselves need to develop a more complex mindset. If leaders can't imagine things that don't yet exist, how can they expect anybody else in their organization to do that? And if you can't imagine things that don't yet exist, you're not going to be able to innovate. So you've got to keep supporting. So collaboration and innovation are very closely linked. And both of them require more autonomy and a bit less control and higher levels of psychological complexity. But you've just got to keep supporting them more to get past collaboration, which unlocks extra value, to innovation, which unlocks even more. So it's part of the same journey, which I guess is good news, Sean, you know?
Absolutely. I think I loved that line, John. Without autonomy, the only innovation you'll see is the innovation people are told to do. Love that line. John, that's all I had for today. Thank you so much again for joining us. Do you have any suggestions, John, for our listeners to go and learn more about digital transformation?
What I would recommend is not that people go and read about digital transformation if they want to know more about digital transformation. I'd go and learn about adult developmental psychology or constructivist developmental psychology. I would look at the work of people like Suzanne Cook-Greuter and Robert Keegan and William Torbett and our friends at Heart Hill and the Leadership Development Framework. Because another quote from Edwards Deming, I guess, just to close with, I mentioned him earlier. Oh, no, it's Peter Senge. So a quote from Peter Senge in a letter to Edwards Deming. He said, what folly it is to think of transforming our organizations without first transforming ourselves. Transformation has to start with us. How can we think of transforming our organizations if we as leaders, as managers, keep looking at the world in the same way and doing the same thing? So it's about our development. So that's what I'd go and learn about if you're interested in transformation. And Torbett's work particularly leads to complexity of conversations and organizations, which is also very helpful in the digital transformation space. And I think if people can get their heads around that, the rest of digital transformation drops into place in a very meaningful and real way, rather than just reading the endless literature about digital transformation, which gets a bit dry and meaningless, I think.
John, again, thank you so much for your time. All the valuable insights and information. One of our favorite podcast interviews here. For our listeners, please go ahead and check out John's suggestions and the resources that we'll post on our Atlassian Advantage site. And of course, you can contact us anytime via email atlassian@carahsoft.com or give us a shout 833-547-2468. John, pleasure to have you as always. Thank you so much and looking forward to the next time we can catch up.
Likewise, Sean. Thank you, buddy. Take care.